So, parables against the religious leaders of the day. So we're carrying on with our series on Holy Habits by Andrew Roberts, and we're now on chapter 13. Aren't we doing well? So, Holy Habits, pointing out some of the holy habits of the early church. And in this week's exciting installment, after telling a story about street pastors, where church members go out onto the streets of Telford late at night to help people home from clubs and bars when they're a bit drunk, Andrew Roberts then records a poem of thanks and wonder by one such worse-for-wear party-goer. The poem talks about the love and the care shown to her despite not deserving it. In fact, she compares this love to the beating she would have got from her father, and then finishes with these lines: I never thought that I would ever see someone care enough to watch over me. The watching over her probably involved hot chocolate and flip-flops to walk in instead of her stilettos. I imagine it's quite hard to walk in stilettos while drunk, but I've never personally tried it. Now, Roberts reminds us of a principle from another book about discipleship or following Jesus, where the author gives three ingredients to being a follower of Jesus. Firstly, worship, giving worth to loving God. Secondly, intentional community, so committing to the well-being of other followers of Jesus. And thirdly, mission, demonstrating love to others, those who are not yet followers of Jesus. And Robert says that service is a part of that mission. It's not enough to say, I love you. It needs to be demonstrated by actions. On the flip side, Roberts also says, it's not enough to demonstrate love. We need to say, why? Because God's love in us spills over. Now, let me state straight up, we as Christians don't have a monopoly on being kind to others, but our motivation is because we are showing God's love. Now, these readings that Fred has just done remind us that service is an act of obedience. If we're going to claim to be followers of Jesus, then we have to act like him. On Thursdays, here at St. Mark's, just about every Sunday of the year at 10 o'clock, we have a service. And recently, we've been thinking about true faith, or living faith. And I read a really good definition from the Roman Catholic Catechism many years ago. It says something along these lines: we can have faith, but if that faith is not demonstrated by loving actions, it is a dead faith. When there is loving action that proves we have faith, then that is living faith. In other words, if you're just talking the talk, it's dead. But if you're walking the walk, it's living. Then Roberts tells another story about a church of 10 elderly folk that took most of their church building and turned it into a soft play area and a cafeteria. It breathed new life into the building and the community, and they had thousands of people come through the doors. The point of the story, though, is captured in this line: if a church is not a faith-sharing community, then why is it there? If the church is not serving the community in which it exists, then what is the point of it being there? Now, here at St. Mark's, we seek to serve the community through the community cinema, the market, messy church, messy munchkins, community lunches, providing the community hall, church services, the Tattenham Corner community events that we started, saving the library. I'm nearly running out of fingers. There is now another great community need for those living on Preston Park, a space for a community garden. And we're exploring this possibility along with Maria, who's the community worker on Preston Park. It could be a very exciting project. It could be nerve-wracking. It could be a community hub that puts healthy food on people's plates. The church council are waiting for more detailed plans of what that will look like. Now, going back to that Thursday service, where the average age is 70-something, I want to talk about last week's statement from the bishops of the Church of England, because no doubt some of you will read about it in the papers. They made a pronouncement on civil partnerships, that the Church of England policy on banning gay marriage, we wouldn't be having it, and that priests in civil partnerships have to declare that they are celibate. No sex, please, we are Anglican. This statement has made the church a bit of a laughingstock among many, especially the younger generations. Now, going back to that Thursday service, I asked them a few years back, what do you think would happen if we put an LGBTI rainbow flag outside our church for all to see? After a moment's thought, someone said, it would tell gay people they are welcome here. I nearly cheered, but then someone else added, some other churches in the area wouldn't like us anymore. How true and sad. Sad that some Christians wouldn't like us. Maybe that is the price we have to pay. After all, many of the religious folk didn't like Jesus. He served the people the religious folk saw as outsiders and ended up hated by many of the so-called insiders. Would we as a church be willing to pay that price? To be disliked by others? This acting the way Jesus would is what is technically called incarnational ministry. That sounds good. Drop that into your next coffee and cake meeting with somebody. It means putting flesh or carne, as in chili con carne, that's where it comes from, onto God's love. It's what theologians say Jesus was doing. He was incarnated. I've often told the story about the little girl drawing a picture and her mum asks, what are you drawing? She replies, I'm drawing a picture of God. The mum gently explains that no one knows what God looks like. The girl, quick as a flash, replies, they will when I've finished. But as Christians, we believe that we do know what God looks like. God looks like Jesus, because he was seen in the flesh. Gandhi said something to the effect that if only Christians behaved more like Jesus, he might become a Christian. We are called to be like Jesus in our flesh and blood. We are called to do like Jesus did, act like Jesus acted. We are called to be incarnational, in the flesh. So, perhaps when we're asked, what does God look like? Our reply should be, let me show you. And show love. Roberts then returns to the theme of hospitality, which we already looked at. And he says, we need to invite others to eat with us, and we need to be willing to eat with them. True hospitality works both ways. Roberts also reminds us that God has a soft spot for the poor and orphaned and dispossessed. Now, as many of you will know, Heather and I used to work in the Soviet Union, or the former Soviet Union, to give it its proper name now, I suppose. And receiving hospitality from the poor is often a challenge, as we discovered there. For two reasons. Firstly, sometimes the amount of food offered is just too much. I have sat at tables knowing that if I don't eat the food offered, it will be highly offensive to the host, but also that the food on the table is a couple of days' worth of their food served up in one meal. The second time it is difficult, I've sat at tables to eat food which just seconds before was covered in cockroaches until the light was switched on and you could see them scampering off the table. Again, not to eat would be highly offensive. Sometimes showing love is costly. So what is service? Well, it depends on the context, but it boils down to love in action. Now, messy church kids can tell you, because every time we have messy church, before the prayer time, I put on this white robe, a sign that God washes us clean, and I then hold up this stole and ask, "What does this symbolize?" And they answer it. They answer that it's like the towel that Jesus wore around his waist when he washed the disciples' feet and said, "Love each other the way I have loved you." And how did he love them? By washing their feet. He took the place of a servant or a slave and served them. Are we willing to serve each other? Are we willing to serve others to demonstrate God's love to them? It might be costly. If we do, we will be in good company. Company of Mary, who carried and bore Jesus. Of Joseph, who took on fatherly duties that weren't really his. Of Simeon, the old prophet who prayed every day until he could say, "Now my eyes have seen God's salvation." And Anna, who spent many years as a widow, devoted to God, and always waiting to see the special child, to see Jesus, God's anointed servant. And I want to finish with this quote, which finishes the chapter of the book. And it's this paragraph is entitled, "A Holy Muddle." As with all of the holy habits explored in this book, the habit of serving cannot be practiced in isolation. It is informed by biblical teaching, supported by fellowship, and often involves eating. It is an expression of gladness, generosity and giving, a natural outworking of prayer. As Pope Francis put it, "You pray for the hungry, then you feed them. This is how prayer works." So service is a bit of a muddle of everything, but essentially it is love in action.